The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Well, we know that the pandemic has been detrimental for some sectors, but our next guest's company has been flourishing. Founded by Talaman Eric Mosley, WorkHuman has achieved unicorn status, meaning it's now valued at over $1 billion. The business specialises in company rewards for workers. Among their clients are four out of the five firms currently trying to develop a vaccine for COVID-19. Earlier, we caught up with Eric. He's quarantining after arriving back from the States. We interviewed him down the line. Towards the end of the interview, you'll notice a little bit of a change in the sound for that reason. And I started by asking him about growing up in Talla during a period of high unemployment and poverty in many parts of Ireland. I asked if it had impacted on his childhood.
Yeah, it's Talla in the 80s and our little corner of it. It was pretty bleak. I had the added issue of my parents had broken up, so it was just myself and my sister and my mother in Talla. I would say we tasted kind of real poverty in stages at that time. And so looking at that and looking at my mother going through some very tough times really made an indelible mark on me, which I've probably railed against forevermore. You can never get that out of your system. Just watching that struggle. We used to, Talla at that time, it was when the M50, for example, was being built and it had been abandoned. The building of it had been abandoned for a few years. And we used to kind of play around on the shell of the M50 when it was just a derelict strip around the kind of Firhouse roundabout area. And it was amazing to think what came after that. You know, it was a memory I can visualize, you know, on that road that was dusty and, you know, abandoned. And then now I drive across it and it's a different world.
But in relation to that poverty that you talked about, I'm sure that was a shared experience in the sense that many of the guys that were in school with you were maybe in similar circumstances.
Yeah, certainly in the area that I grew up in, there's no doubt. Talla even had a reputation. I remember my mother telling me that if I was applying for a part-time job, for example, to never say I was from Talla, because I'd never get the job. And I think back on that and it's, you know, ridiculous that she had that fear and that she had to have that fear. And maybe there was some truth in it as well. In the school, it was always difficult. There was a little bit of, I remember the free school books program. My mother wanted me to apply for the free school books because we couldn't afford the books. But they made it very, very difficult in that they would just announce, does anybody need an application form for free books? And you were meant to put your hand up in front of all your classmates. And it was humiliating. So I didn't. And then I'd go back to my mother and say, I didn't do it. And she would just, you know, smile and work on. But I look back on it as a tough time.
Were you into school? Were you enthusiastic about school? Did you like it?
I was the least enthusiastic student in Ireland, I think. I was a very difficult student in that I wasn't capable. When I look back on it, I wasn't capable of doing what I was meant to be doing to thrive in that environment. And when I look back on that, it was just maturity. I just needed to put those years in to just mature. A little bit of a head in the clouds, I think, syndrome.
You were saying that your parents had split up. It was a fairly tough situation. Your mother would have been, you know, very much doing everything that she could. Was that very hard on you? And do you think that it shaped or influenced you?
Yeah, so I think I was seven when my parents split up. What people don't understand now is that back then, a marriage breakdown was taboo. You know, it was a hidden thing. It was something that you would never talk about. It was a lot of shame attached to it. I probably went my whole childhood until I was 20 without ever saying it to anyone. And that was just the culture. So you felt like you were living with a dark secret, which was, you know, looking back on it now, it's hard to it's hard to understand why it was like that. But that was Ireland in that time in the 80s. And when you're carrying around a secret like that, it's a lot of shame, and it does colour how you interact with the world. You kind of mature beyond your years too fast. And you add into that then the struggle because, you know, in a broken home like that, there's going to be a lot less money. There's going to be uncertainty about the future. And it becomes a little bit of a us against the world ethic in the house, you know, with my mother and myself and my sister. And so we became very tight in that way, you know, a little team fighting against the shame and the poverty. And it's just totally ridiculous, but that's what it felt like. And I think that did create definitely a drive in me, you know, kind of a drive thinking I'm never going back there. I am, you know, and that energy is still there. And no matter what level of success I get, that energy of, you know, I'm never going back there is still drives me. And I don't realize it sometimes, but then that's what it is.
And where did the idea for WorkHuman, and the company was first called Globaforce, where did that come from?
I met a person called Eddie Reynolds, who was at retirement age, and I got talking to him. And basically, there was an idea for a international gift-giving service for consumers. And it's an amazing story in that Eddie, his daughter lived in Japan, and she was getting married. And all of the friends and relatives of the family wanted to give a wedding gift, but they didn't know how to give a wedding gift to somebody who lived in Japan. And so the idea was born, well, you know, you could easily send flowers to her using Interflora. You could go into any florist and flowers would arrive in Tokyo, no problem. So what if you could do that for wedding gifts, or what if you could do that for gift certificates for major retailers? And so the original idea was this international gift giving service. So the first 18 months, the two of us, we traveled the world. We were in 50 countries. We used to jump on a plane, go to Australia for the weekend and do a couple of meetings and then fly back. And I would sit with my laptop and, you know, program the software that would run the company. And then go into the hotel at night and program the software into the wee hours, and then get up in the morning, go and do the meetings. And I look back on that as well as it was like an MBA from a top business college, because I got to do business, I got to interact with different nationalities all over the world, and it was just unbelievable. It was like all of the cliches about different countries and doing business with different personalities was all true, I found. You know, the Germans were really efficient and you'd go around. So that was an amazing time. And then after that, what we realized was that the it was companies that were using our service much more than consumers. Companies were, and we asked them, well, why are you buying 1,000 gift certificates for your employees? And they would say, well, they're using them for incentive programs or recognition programs. But those programs are unrecognizable to what we have today. So we created much more modern recognition programs where it was not your employee of the month. It was more that the vast majority of employees would win awards, and not from their manager, but from their colleagues, from the people they work with all day long. So that's how it grew. It started with an international gift giving service. We realized companies were using it, and we switched it to social recognition.
And it's interesting because as you talk about the early year and a half of the Globaforce WorkHuman business, and you're off to Australia working for a weekend and back again, I mean, that must have been pretty tough. Were you broke as well? Like, I mean, was the company making money?
We were as broke as it's possible to be. Like, we used to do those trips, and every airport we flew into, we had to get the bus into town. You couldn't afford a taxi. You know, business travel is not normally like that, obviously. And so but we didn't have any money, but we had to do these meetings. And so, you know, but it was relentless. And it was also exciting, you know, going into a new city and, you know, traveling the world like that, that brings its own energy. And I sometimes think, you know, everybody should do it that way before they do it the nice way, because it teaches you, you know, it's character building. But yeah, we struggled for a good few years. And that also gave us a strong sense of discipline around money and cash. And that's really important. Other companies, they might raise vast amounts of VC capital and they never have to struggle like that. And they never have that discipline. And then when they get later on and they get bigger, you know, they don't have that internal culture of discipline around expenditures. And that doesn't serve them. It's such a great training camp for the future.
And as the business was growing, America was obviously always going to be a big part of it. And you made a decision that it was best to move there, because I would imagine the kind of service you're offering probably fits better into an American big business culture.
Yes. What we found after the first few years, we looked at our customer base and they were all American names. And in the, and some people say, oh, well, that's, you know, that's very touchy-feely, you know, and the American corporate culture is more touchy-feely. But it's not really, it's not that at all. It's a more innovative, advanced view of what makes up human relationships and culture and team building. And a recognition that there's 80 years of psychology research that shows that human beings have a hierarchy of needs and you have to cater to those needs. So, you know, classic Maslow's hierarchy of human needs would say that we all have a need for food and water. And then we have a need for companionship and love in our lives. And then we have a need to be appreciated as people and for the work that we do. If you accept that, which is, you know, 80 years of psychology research, you realize that you're employees also have a need to feel recognized. And when you do that, you get happier employees. But it's not just happiness, it's also engagement, it's energy, it's focus. And ultimately, that turns into creativity and innovation. And so they, you know, you have a culture where you have 1,000 people, let's say, and they're all energized and focused and creative. Well, you're going to beat your competitor who's got a demoralized employee base where they don't want to be there. They don't want to come in. They hate each other. They have a toxic environment. Of course, the first company is going to beat the second company in a competitive situation. So that's what they understand.
Eric, what about the old fashioned size nines giving someone a bit of a bollocking when they need to be, you know, pushed to work harder or try harder?
Yeah. Well, the old philosophy of the beatings will continue until morale improves. To me, it's a fascinating view of the world that pain is the solution to everything. You know, it's a very testosterone driven
macho. It's macho as a manager to threaten, you know, if you don't do your work, you're out of here, that kind of thing. There's no research on earth that shows that works.
Now, a valuation on the business of $1.2 billion, am I right in saying you own about 11% of it? So you're north of $110 million there. Is that a good feeling?
I've long since learned that kind of game of multiplying your percentage by whatever the current valuation is and thinking that you have that is a fool's errand, in that it's not the way to think about it. For me, I'm in for the long haul. People find it hard to believe, but I genuinely believe that we can build an iconic, historic company here. It's a long way to go.
How would your mom feel about her son having a billion euro business that he set up from scratch?
Well, she passed away 2 years ago. And so I did get to bring her to a number of our events, and she did see the company blossom, as it were. So, you know, she was obviously very proud and very protective. And, you know, she used to say to me, if there was, you know, anything going on outside, you know, outside of work, she used to say, you know, Eric, you don't let this affect your work. You don't let this affect your work. And it wasn't that she wanted it to be a financial success. It was nothing to do with that. But she saw that something special was happening and that I was contributing, and that that was in itself something to be protected. And, you know, I used to think that was quite an amazing thing. It was just a pride of creation and making a mark in the world. And she could see that and wanted to make sure that I wasn't diverted by whatever crisis that was happening.
Well, Eric Moseley, founder and CEO of WorkHuman, thank you very much for talking to us on the programme.
Thank you.